Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And leave it to Dalton Conley, NYU sociologist and author of books like The Pecking Order, Which Siblings Succeed and Why, to analyze his own parenting through the lens of the science and social science literature on child rearing. But wait, his new book, Parentology, does not read like an academic journal. In fact, it's more like an ironic confessional with a century's worth of data analysis craftily woven into stories about taking his children to adult movies. We'll hear how he defines adult and how he sometimes lets his kids curse at him. In fact, chapter 7 of the book is called Shut the F Up, Dad, Discipline or Lack Thereof. So rather than do a conventional book overview interview thing, let's talk about chapter 7. Hi, Dalton. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And by the way, Dalton Conley is chair of the Children and Youth section of the American Sociological Association. So we've posted an excerpt from Chapter 7 on our webpage, with your publisher's permission, encouragement even, that starts with the scene where your 11-year-old son calls you a goddamn pedophile. Want to tell that story?
Well, he was at that point, this is skipping forward or filling you in a bit, he was always had difficulty getting to sleep. We were dealing with ADHD issues, and we're trying various strategies with that. So it was very difficult to get him up in the morning all the time. It's a bit, literally, I had to drag him out of bed. I still do often, even though he's older. And so he was basically very grumpy at me and cursing at me while I was trying to put some peel some dirty socks off of him and, you know, get the process of getting dressed started. I accept that. I accept that he
So he blurted that out. And just to be clear, there was no whiff of any kind of alleged pedophilia. I just want our listeners who did not read the book, as I have, to be very clear on that. This is just a snarky quip because you're peeling dirty socks off him, which he's failing to do himself.
Right. It's just, you know, a low blow from him, so to speak. And, you know, if anything, I'd be proud that he knows what that word means at that age. So that's what the essence of this chapter deals with, the fact that I shifted my priorities from regulating their consumption of media and quote-unquote adult content and behavior in the home to basically turning everything into an educational opportunity as opposed to behavioral regulation.
So the point being, I think in part, that let your kids curse you out once in a while and otherwise be rude to you to a point, as long as they don't do it to others in public.
Right. I think there's an important distinction to make between public and private behavior. And in this day and age where those lines are increasingly blurred with Facebook and ask.fm and all sort and this new thing in the Times today about secret.com where people anonymously post snark, I think that going back to the old-fashioned notion of a clear boundary between what's private and intimate and where you can let your hair down back, what Irving Goffman, the sociologist, called backstage, and how you behave in the public sphere, i.e. the front stage, is an important distinction for kids to learn. And many parents emphasize their kids being obedient to them. And I worry, there's some research, but it's really inconclusive, but I worry that overemphasis on treating your parents with such respect and formality leads to release of pent-up frustration and other ill-advised behavior in the public sphere when the parents are not around. I'd much rather my kids be extremely polite in public to teachers, to other individuals on the subway and so forth, and let it all hang out at home than the other way around.
By the way, I mentioned that there's an excerpt, this excerpt of the book on our page that's getting there. It's not there yet. So in a little while, you'll be able to read this for yourself at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, but not quite yet. The reason I made sure to mention that you're chair of the Children and Youth section of the American Sociological Association is so people just don't start calling up and call you Slacker Dad for this. You've already mentioned Goffman. You have a social science research-based underpinning for these paternal decisions?
Or rationalization or something. My colleague, Annette Leroux, the sociologist at the University of Pennsylvania, distinguishes between two methods of child rearing that she observed in her ethnographic study. One is what's called natural growth, where kids are taught to obey parents. Their social life is largely separate from the adult world. They're taught to be quiet around adults, but then go off and play by themselves. And most instruction is in the form of commands or dicta to kids. And then the more middle class or highly educated parents tend to involve their kids in adult life more and tend to, instead of giving commands, tend to debate, as we know, give them choices and, you know, discuss why you have to take a bath now or get to school on time or what have you.
And then they either take the bath or they don't.
Right. There's a whole literature on trying to structure the choices, make a false choice in a way. Do you want to take a bath or a shower?
Huh. But that's a trick.
Yeah. So the idea is to engage. I think more important than the choice is the discussion about why it's necessary to take a bath.
Dalton Conley, author of Parentology, Everything You Wanted to Know About the Science of Raising Children, But We're Too Exhausted to Ask. Parents, anyone else? 212-433-WNYC. On this particular question, do you ever let your kids curse you out without consequences? And what about the bigger framework of styles of parenting that Dalton Conley is describing? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I will point out that one friend of mine, when I told him about this yesterday, knowing the segment was coming up, though this particular friend is childless, I should add, said, no way, wash their mouths out with soap. So have you gotten any reaction to that section? And does it vary by parent or non-parent status or sociologist versus non-sociologist?
The book just came out, so I haven't had a lot of feedback yet. I'm sure it's going to upset a lot of people. Even my own sister disagrees with my parenting approach. So I would explain, for example, what cannabis is to my kids and explain the chemical effects of THC and why it's not good for a developing brain to have THC in it and so forth. And she bans me from saying anything like that in front of her kids. So I see the differences in styles even within my own family.
And you do point out that it's only your son and not his sister, your daughter, who is inclined to even think about cursing anyone out. In fact, would you say that you have a little Bart and Lisa thing going on in your family?
Definitely. In fact, there's, I think, a betting pool at my daughter's school who can get her to curse the first, because she's never actually uttered a curse word. So it's interesting about how siblings want to differentiate themselves from each other. It's interesting how, you know, I didn't leave much space for her to rebel, and this is one way I guess she can rebel, by being super polite and goody two-shoes. That's fine with me. So, and it makes you think maybe actually what we do makes no difference whatsoever, that it's all innate personality.
Being rebellious being a goody two-shoes is a form of rebellion? Did you just say that?
Possibly. You know, I describe another friend's daughter who is a very famous socialist. In fact, she ran on the socialist ticket for vice president, author of the famous anti-war play McBird. And her daughter, which way did she rebel? She became a religious conservative. So, you know, you got to go whichever direction there's room, I suppose.
Ed in Jamaica, Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, how you doing, Brian?
Good.
I got to disagree with your guest. I'm the father of a 16-year-old son, and I would never allow him to tell me F off or anything like that. I mean, it's an issue of respect. As my son developed, Brian, I discussed things with him differently as his comprehension increased and his ability to understand. We've discussed the ills of marijuana. I've also had a problem with substance abuse in my life. We've discussed the ills of certain behaviors as he got older. But it's an issue of respect. You know, you're not going to curse anybody out, especially me, because I am the provider and you will have respect in my home.
I don't know if that has come up between you and your 16-year-old, but how would you enforce it?
It has come up, and I have enforced it.
How?
I've taken away privileges. When he was younger, a little paddling on the butt. Now that he's older, I take away privileges. Mm-hmm. You won't be using the iPhone. You won't be using the computer.
Right.
I mean, you know, the punishment goes commensurate with the ability to understand.
Ed, thank you. Dalton, you want to say anything?
I think that calibrating punishment to level of understanding of the child by age is a great idea. I also want to say that I'm just throwing out my own experience and my own choices as an option, as something that other folks can, you know, adopt parts of, reject wholly, or just react to. So I think that there's no one right way to parent, and we all have unique challenges. That's one of the arguments of the book, is that anybody who's trying to sell you a parenting book with, you know, the 7 bullet points is really selling you snake oil, that you really need to dive into each kid and each specific issue and understand what we know about those particular issues and try out different strategies and adjust as you're going along with trial and error and hypothesis and revision.
Patrick in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Dalton Conley. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. I applaud the author for his bravery to put himself out there like that. I guess my question is, what do you do in these situations with your child does this? How do you talk it through? And what if there's no good resolution? I'm guessing a lot of times there is no good resolution. And then also, what do you do with the siblings who are fighting? Do you have suggestions around that?
Well, I should, you know, we're talking about chapter 7, but I think really important to put in context is an earlier chapter where I wanted to get them to do more math, to do math, to be better at math in school, because I think math is so important. It's a weeder subject for a lot of schools and a lot of academic life today. And, of course, it's of increasing importance in the economy writ large now. So I wanted to train them to do math. So I started bribing them to do math. And this is another issue of, you know, a hotly debated issue of whether or not you should bribe your kids. One concern about bribery is that if you start paying people, kids or adults, to do some task, then any intrinsic motivation they had to do the task gets eroded from that being associated with the extrinsic reward. And, you know, I kind of waved away those concerns and started bribing my kids to do extra math during summer and during vacations and so forth with money or gummy bears or video game time or what have you.
At what age?
This is really around probably 8 starting. It's over now. They have enough homework as it is without extra math. So it turns out I don't think I eroded their innate desire to do math. I don't know how much there was to begin with anyway. But what I did do, and what the unintended perverse consequence of that was set up a market economy in my house. So now everything, if I need to get my son to do something, it's all a negotiation around a market price to do something extra. And also, discipline now takes the form of fines. So he has a base allowance, and it gets adjusted up or down based on things. And that's basically
– How old is he now?
He's now 14.
Do you regret instituting this market system in your home?
You know, I think he would have instituted it. he would have suggested it if I didn't institute it to begin with. Who knows? You know, you can't run another – you know, brood of kids to try another experiment.
And since we're talking about the different siblings, relevant to your book, your previous book, The Pecking Order, you state in this chapter that you are suspicious of birth order as an explanation for anything, but you acknowledge right there in print that you're tougher on your firstborn daughter, the goody two-shoes, even though your son is the more prone to acting out. Can you unpack that a little?
Yeah. In my earlier book, I found that in families with 2 kids – there was no effect ultimately on their economic or educational success of whether or not they were first or second born. There might have been different pathways, different personalities to get to that ultimate socioeconomic status or educational attainment, but ultimately there was no cost of being first or second born. In larger families, I did document a cost to being the middle born, second or middle born in a larger family. So in my own kids, I was confronted with something that was, you know, ethnographic or prima facie evidence that I was wrong in the earlier book. There's got to be birth order effects because I can see my kids are so different. They so fit the birth order pattern of the hyper-responsible, adult-oriented firstborn and the rebellious secondborn, that it really was a challenge to me as a social scientist.
Nicola in Brooklyn Heights. You're on WNYC with Dalton Conley. Hi.
Hi. So I've got a soon-to-be 16-year-old in a few days, and she's quite outspoken with me. And yet, when she's outside and around her friends, she's the sweetest thing. And I'm just wondering, I mean, should I punish her for talking crazy to me, or is that a phase that she's going through? Because I was raised in a Caribbean home that where it was a dictatorship. It wasn't a democracy in my home, in my that I'm doing with her. So I'm wondering, should I go back to the democracy, or should I let her express her crazy comments to me?
I mean, you're doing what I've advocated in the book, or what I tried in the book, which is, as long as she's polite to everybody out in the world, then give her a little space to vent at home. Now, you know, both of our your daughter's the same age as my daughter. They're still works in progress. So who knows how this is all going to turn out? It could completely backfire in the end when they're adults. But I think that, you know, the literature suggests that adolescents do need some space to distance themselves from their parents, that they, you know, they're going to do that one way or the other. If they do that in front of you by talking back or disagreeing with you, maybe that's more benign or even helpful than if they have to do it behind your back outside with their friends.
Okay.
Good luck, Nicola.
Thank you.
And does it drive you crazy being a sociologist of the thing that you're doing in your personal life? Do you find sometimes that you have too much information or too much conflicting information, since we know social science so often leads us in directions that have a lot of uncertainties?
Well, they often say that the kids of psychiatrists are the most screwed up. I think sociologists might have them beat by a peg. It's so anxiety-inducing to be in the field where you see – I go to talks, and instead of paying attention to whether or not the statistical models are right or I agree with the assumptions of the theory or whatever, I'm thinking, oh, my God, what does this mean for my kids? Oh, my God, they're finished. They're doomed. And it really can be a disadvantage, at least in terms of the parents' own calmness and well-being, to know too much about the research literature. The book tries to sort of, you know, make light of that and show me as a neurotic parent that's trying to sort all this out, this too much information. I mean, even what month you're born in, I've seen studies that published in the Proceedings of National Academy of Science, has an important impact on your health and longevity.
Wait, you mean horoscopes are real?
I guess so.
The book is Parentology, Everything You Wanted to Know About the Science of Raising Children But Were Too Exhausted to Ask, by NYU sociologist Dalton Conley. And Nick in Oyster Bay, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Initially, I was a little disturbed by hearing about the giving the kid the green light to curse. For me, my perception of is it a lack of vocabulary? I perceive cursing as an act of violence. So in our family, what we try to instill with our kids is that it's okay to be angry. When they were younger, they didn't have the ability to express themselves, so we would all say, you got to put it into words. I started working for a company a while back, and so many people cursed there. And it took a long time to get them to stop cursing. I will say the same thing, listen, you're capable of so much more. And they eventually
You say that to your coworkers?
Yes, I do, because I find it personally offensive. I perceive cursing as an act of violence. And so I would just, by all means, I don't want to be around this. I feel that people are capable of so much more. So to give a child the green light to go do that, we're obviously on different planets, because I would not do that. I wouldn't do it to another person.
Do you have kids at home?
Yes, I do. I have twins, and I also have an older boy, my wife and I.
Of what ages, may I ask?
Our son is 10, and our twins are 7.
So do you get your son to say, Father, I am so frustrated and angry about external conditions in my life that sometimes I just want to express inappropriately the inner feelings that I'm experiencing at this moment. You know, I'm joking, but how do you get
–
what do you tell him is acceptable, and can he do it?
Well, like in the moment, it won't be my wife or I that will irritate him. It will be one of his siblings, and we'll say, Pierce, it's okay to be angry, but you can't lash out physically. And you can't say certain words. because that's not something, do you want that said to you? And that's all we do is we mirror it back to him. Would you want this word said to you? And it's not a personal, because, you know, I have a friend from Brazil, Brian, and he always says the same thing. You never see an orange fall from an apple tree. And it's really just the kids are merely a reflection of the parents. Their DNA in some way predisposes them to be that way.
Nick, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much.
I agree that there's a couple issues in here. One is usage of words. I agree 100% that using the F word or other curses is a shortcut, and it's vocabulary reducing, and it's oversimplifies complex feelings. And I do emphasize that with my kids, that I want them to express exactly what they're feeling rather than just relying on those. On the other hand, in terms of the issue of it being violent, so to speak, I mean, there's definitely a clear line between physical violence and, if you want to call this emotional violence, cursing. However, I do notice that often using the curses, I tried to explain this to my kids, reduces how hurtful something can be. My daughter, who's never, as I said, never said a cuss word, she is so much more subtle, and the knife goes in much deeper when she says something, an offhand remark that she wants to, when I know she's actually angry and wants to hurt me or her brother. Maybe she has more practice at it because she's never said a curse word. But I don't think that necessarily curse words are more damaging or hurtful than something that's expressed as eloquently as Brian just expressed his frustration.
In the academic abstract, of course. The other detail from the chapter I wanted to bring out, and we're almost out of time, but we'll just mention it, your passage about taking your kids to adult movies like Truffaut's 400 Blows, to a violent Israeli anti-war movie called Waltzing with Bashir, to the Werner Herzog documentary Grizzly Man, which, let's just say, ends better for the grizzly than for the man. How do you decide?
Well, again, I didn't really decide. It kind of evolved. However, I would say that we're very concerned about, quote-unquote, protecting our children from age, quote-unquote, inappropriate material. However, I would say modern society is so age-segregated compared to past epochs that kids don't experience death, don't experience a sexuality, don't experience all the things we're trying to protect them in a mature adult way. And so then they're left online by themselves, perhaps, and they're being exposed to it. Even if you are the most controlling parent, you think you're protecting them from it. So why not actually engage things like the fact that sometimes people who invade bears' habitats get eaten, or that there is this horrible conflict going on in the Middle East?
And even regarding Grizzly Man, you note the different reactions between your super empathic daughter and your more devil-may-care son. You write that he laughed about what an idiot the ursine-eaten guy was, and your daughter said we should be more upset for the multiple bears that got shot in the film than we should for a guy who gets eaten. He was probably threatening their habitat, she rationalized, and grizzlies need to eat to survive too. Wow. This says here on my screen, Waleed in Dubai. Are you in Dubai or are you from Dubai, Waleed?
No, I'm from New York, but I'm in Dubai. Dawn's a close friend, so I couldn't miss up an opportunity to call.
Uh-huh. Okay, you guys could have gone to lunch, but instead you're having the public conversation on the radio instead of some other caller. I'm just giving you a hard time. What do you want to say?
So I'd love to hear Dawn talk a little bit about the science behind this. How do you go about studying something as complicated as parental techniques and look at outcomes with any reliability?
Well, that's a good question. Well, there is no way to study, for example, on your own kids. So I just throw out a bunch of things I do and kind of like spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks and what doesn't. In terms of actual social science, you know, we don't randomly assign kids to parents. We don't. We do have some parenting interventions that try to train parents to do different things. They've yielded modest results. The best approach, I think, to studying these phenomena are, for example, to look at natural experiments. So the last chapter deals with the parental divorce that my kids experience. And if you want to really know whether or not—
You and your wife are divorced?
Yeah. To know whether or not divorce is, you know, it's easy to look at divorced parents and look at families that have two married parents still there and say, oh, look, the kids from divorced families end up worse than the kids from married families. But that's the apples and oranges comparison, because the real comparison is not between all married families and all divorced families. It's from between the divorced families and what would have happened if equally bad marriages stayed together. And that's a counterfactual you can't really observe. So social scientists will do things like MIT economist Jonathan Gruber did, which is look at state laws that make it easier or harder to be divorced, that are independent of the condition of your marriage, and use that to see how kids turn out differently when we make it easier or harder based on public policy to get divorced. And, for example, he finds there are some costs of divorce.
But can you come to a sociologist answer? Can you approach the answer to the question, is it better for the children for parents in equivalently bad marriages to stay together or to get divorced?
I guess I would say, based on that study, and that's one study, but I would say it's the best one around, that there is a cost to kids of splitting up.
How do they feel, before you go, last question, how do your kids feel about their home life being revealed in print for all the world to see and presumably comment on tomorrow after this book has been out for a day on their Facebook pages?
Yeah, I think that they have grown up pretty used to being lab rats. I mean, their mother has been called a mad scientist in the press and involves them in her techno art conceptual experiments and so forth. And, I've always dipped into the personal, at least not as deeply as in this book, but in other books, to kind of frame sociological arguments. So I think they're pretty used to it by now, although this is going to be quite the test.
Dalton Conley, NYU sociology professor and chair of the Children and Parents section of the American Sociological Association, is the author now of Parentology, Everything You Wanted to Know About the Science of Raising Children But Were Too Exhausted to Ask. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll go live to Crimea, where a dramatic scene is unfolding at a naval base that Russia is taking control of that has been manned by Ukrainians. Then we'll talk about the New York area measles outbreak, what you need to know to protect yourself and your kids. Stay with us.